Welcome to the Jimmy Office Hours podcast, where academics talk about academics. We'll travel from the depths of liberal arts to the forefront of practical application. Join us as we dive into critical discussions shaping the minds of tomorrow. All right, welcome to Jimmy Office Hour. My name is Jacob Barnard. I've got with me Scott Lloyd and Brian Mistro. So the episode today, we're going to talk about athletics and liberal arts. So Brian, do you want to give us a quick introduction for yourself though?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, my name is Brian Mistro. I get Mistro a lot. I get Maestro sometimes, even though I'm not, you know, I'm not that guy. But when I went to school here at Jamestown, 2005 to 2009, everybody called me Mistro. So you're not in the wrong by any means, because that's what President Peterson calls me. So I think I'll have to handle that sometimes. But
yeah, and as an 05 grad, I think that's how I originally heard it myself.
100%, man. And so for you, it's for me, to be honest with you, I came from Arizona. I had no idea where North Dakota was on a map. You know, I couldn't have told you, you know, which direction other than north, right? And so I came up on a visit here, loved every second of my experience. I didn't know what I was getting into. And coming from a public school down in Arizona, I didn't know that Jamestown was even a private school type thing. And so when I came up here, I wanted to play football. And what I left with was a pretty cool experience that was way more encompassing than just playing a sport. And so I came up here, did my 4 years, graduated in 2009. Went back home, got into the higher education world in a little different facet. I was the height of the online school boom. I worked at the University of Phoenix for 8 months, and I couldn't sit behind a desk for that long and be on the phones that way. So my head coach that I played for had a graduate assistant opening for football down at Northern State in Aberdeen. Did that for 2 years, received my master's, and then I was at Concordia College over in Moorhead, Minnesota for 7 seasons, 8 years. And then got the job here in 2019. We've been hitting the ground running ever since. So that's you got my recruiting spiel in like 30 seconds there.
So you're now the head coach of football here at UJ. So kind of the first starter question I had, and either one of you can kind of do this, but you know, UJ, we talk a lot about our mission and values. And one of the big mission statements there is the holistic experience for our students. And you kind of touched on that already, Brian, but how does being a student athlete enhance the mission of the university for that holistic approach? Because we have a really high percentage of our students who are student athletes, much more so than I remember in the early 2000s.
Right. To be honest with you, I think it enhances the student experience in such a profound way, because there's so much that's learned through being with other people and coaches and battling adversity and the learning that happens within your sport in general, and just constantly being a lifelong learner that way. I think it's just phenomenal for people to be in situations that are competitive. You know, last I checked, this is America, right? There's winners and losers. And I still like the idea that you can put people in a setting where they truly enjoy what they're doing and they're still learning from it, outside of the classroom learning that's taken place. And I did not really know or value that. But then when I got here as a student athlete, you know, Judy Hager, formerly Judy Erickson, was the admissions counselor that I worked with. She picked me out of the crowd during welcome weekend and said, "Hey, you're going to be my student worker." I was like, "Okay." And she goes, "Well, you're loud, you're obnoxious, and I think that you can give tours really well." I said, "Okay, sounds good." So I was a tour guide when I first got here. And then I was a communications major. And so I got into a couple of those classes, and then my advisor, Steve Listopad, said, "Hey, you're going to write for the student newspaper." I'm like, "Okay, well, you're at every sporting event pretty much, aren't you? Like, we need a sports reporter." So now I'm a football player. I'm giving tours. I'm the sports editor of the newspaper. I mean, there was just some cool things that opened my doors here in college that I didn't have in high school. I graduated with 800 kids. You know, there's 4,000 something students at my high school. Like, I was in football and baseball, and that was it. And I didn't partake in clubs or any activities and stuff like that. So, you know, my college experience was a lot more holistic and all encompassing than my high school experience was. And usually it's kind of depends. It kind of reverse. You see a lot more yearbook kids in high school than you see in college. But being here now with all the sports that we have, I just think, and I've gone through this and read a lot about learning and lifelong learning and things that you do consistently. You know, I'm not a video game guy. I think there's learning that can happen from that, but I like to read things and I like to go through things. And as a football coach, how do we relate that to our kids so that when they leave here, it helps them in life? Because none of these kids are first round draft picks. Like, they're not going to the NFL. And so if we did have one that had a pro day, which was cool. But to be honest with you, like, they're going to be taking what they've learned, hopefully, for some of the adversities that they had in football and in college in general, and becoming better men, becoming better husbands and fathers, all the things that go along with it. So I think it's all encompassing, man. The experience that our kids have as students on top of being athletes is phenomenal.
Coach Brian, it warms my heart that you said you were a communications guy, because that's my discipline, obviously.
Yeah.
Let's go. Big plug for communications. And also, we share the competitive nature as well, as I coach debate and speech. So that's a competitive activity that our students get involved in. I remember a quote by George Will where he said that sports serves society by giving us everyday examples of excellence. So in addition to my love for communications and speech and debate, I also love sports. I love in particular the game of football, because I think it is such an example of what life is, right? You face adversity, you face obstacles, you learn to operate as a team and to cooperate with one another. But you reference this, the idea that most of our students coming here to play football or to play other sports aren't going to make it to the pro leagues. But for a student to come in, for a student athlete to come in, they've got to have sort of that confidence about themselves that maybe they could. So how do you communicate to students that they need to focus on their studies, because, you know, they need to have something to fall back on in case the sports thing doesn't work out? And obviously, if it did, they also want to be a well-rounded individual and have something to talk about should someone stick a microphone in their face post game, right?
Right. No, I think it's a great situation for our students to be involved in something else that helps them learn and keeps growing. And I think the idea, most of these young people know that, all right, I'm probably done, unless it's golf or basketball. I mean, there's some noon league basketball guys that are still 70 years old playing. I mean, whatever, right? But from a professional standpoint, I think most of the kids know, like, all right, this is probably my shot here, my end. And I think the idea that, hey, your studies are more important right now than to get through all of those things so you can have the experience that you want, then maybe some people really lead on. I think sometimes you get the athlete and they're like, oh, well, they only care about sports. Like, that's the overarching, like, well, they're here just to do that. Like, no, they might have came here for that. But once they get here, it's one of those situations. And I think it's most colleges, especially ones that are holistically teaching, like the liberal arts in general, I'm a huge fan of the idea, because frankly, we want more well-rounded human beings. So how do you keep them focused? I'm going to plug the Jimmy football team. You know, chop wood and carry water. Do your job every single day to the best of your abilities, and then surrender the outcome. And when you surrender the outcome and you just give your all, and no matter what happens, you live a better life. And I think that our guys are starting to understand that. And I think most of the student athletes on our campus understand that, hey, you know, one step in front of the other, because, you know, surrendering the outcome is kind of hard for us competitive dudes, right? Like, well, we ought to win. And when you say the word surrender in general, that just sounds bad. But hey, I'm going to give everything I absolutely have to this, so that way, no matter what happens at the end, I can hold my head up high and I'm fine. And I think the people that don't, and the ones that, you know, oh, well, I missed practice that day, or I didn't try that hard, or I didn't go to sleep right, or I didn't eat correctly, that's why we didn't win. When you fall back on an excuse, I'm going to quote my coach, like, excuses are just lies. Like, there are no excuses. There's choices. And if you make a choice, that affects your outcome. And if you make a choice to not go as hard as you can or not give your all into something, then you're already determining what that outcome probably is going to be. And you alluded to football being kind of that. We're kind of crazy in football. So, like, I believe this. And if there's another sport that you can think of, let me know, because I kind of plug this that way. Football guys are nuts. So it's a physical sport, right? So 18-year-old young men, when they come in and play football, usually aren't ready right away. So now you're talking about, okay, I'm probably not going to play for a year or two. So there's going to be thousands of hours of film. So, and I'll get into this too. The film and the learning of the playbook, like, our guys basically take another class. Like, we have meetings every day for about an hour on top of their class load to learn the plays and go through film and the things that to make them better on the field. So they learn all that. They go through 2 years of practice, basically, where they're not playing in games. And then we're one of the only sports outside of maybe the hockey goalie, but even they can score goals sometimes, like, where you only play one side of the ball. So now you're cutting the game in half. So you're only going to play half the time anyway. And now it's a physical game where you're not playing the whole game unless you're the quarterback, which those guys, the pretty boys, don't get touched that much anyway. And so our guys rotate. So now you're only playing half of the game. So we talk to our recruits about this, and it kind of blows their parents' minds, because most of our high school players, they play both ways and they play, you know, most of the game. Hey, you're going to come to college. You're going to take 12 to 15 credit load of classes. Okay. You're going to practice for 2 years basically, and maybe not play at all. And then by the time you're a junior, you might be the backup or the starter, and you're going to play. The average football play is about 5 seconds from whistle to whistle. Now the time's still running, but from whistle to whistle, it's about 5 seconds. Okay. So 5 seconds, let's say you play 50 plays. Okay. We're talking about 250 seconds you're playing. 61, 8. I mean, you're talking about 3 minutes, 3 to 4 minutes of actual playing the game. Now your senior year, you're going to do the same thing. So we play, let's say we play 20 games in that span. You might play less than 2 hours of actual football. You're going to spend 4 years here. You're going to go thousands of hours in the weight room, thousands of hours in the classroom, thousands of hours worth of film to maybe get an hour and a half to 2 hours of actually playing the game. Like, you have to chop and carry every day. Like, you have to one foot in front of the other. So if you don't stay focused on the process, the outcome isn't going to be what you want it to be anyway. So that's how we try to brainwash our kids, you know, use the jarhead term, like, unscrew your head, take out your brain that you think you have, put ours in, screw it back on, trust the process and everything that we do, and you'll get the payoff that you want in the end. Because if you're just looking for playing time, don't play college football.
No, and it's interesting you put it that way, because that really does put a different spin on how our students have been treating their studies. I think that a lot of that is coming driven from the coaches. It reminds me the my first semester teaching, I definitely came in with the stereotype of gonna have to deal with the athletes.
Yep.
And first kind of major assignment that I had for that class, I was flabbergasted. The hockey guys, they were on a trip somewhere. I'm getting emails at 9, 10 o'clock at night. Hey, the Wi-Fi has been spotty on the bus again, but here's our questions for our homework. I was so shocked that I was getting these emails from our athletes. I was answering the emails at 9, 10 o'clock at night because that was not the impression that I had come in to teaching student athletes with, was that they're actually going to be trying diligently do the work while on the road for a game. I think it was early season, so it doesn't really matter. But that had not been my impression of student athletes, nor particularly that sport was not known very well for its diligence in doing homework, at least in high school.
Right.
So it surprised me that the emphasis was really put on that.
And I think, you know, to be – and you guys as professors, man, like – I think we get it really well here at our place. Like at UJ, I think the people that help our students in the classroom understand at a better level than maybe some other places that I've been, that they have more than just school that they're focused on and that they're doing. And some of these kids have jobs now and they're working. Like, it's unbelievable to me the resiliency of some of these kids. Now, there's some that don't. And that's no matter what school you're at in the country, it doesn't matter. But like the diligence and the ability that you guys have to understand that, and then our students have to have the respect for the classroom time as well, I think it's a pretty cool marriage. Because, and especially, I can only speak to football. I mean, I know how much I can pull up on Huddle, how much our film our kids are watching. And now on top of their classes, on top of work, on top of whatever, these kids are watching 1 to 2 hours of film a night so they can be ready on Saturday. Like, geez, guys, like, when do you sleep?
that's something I mentioned to every prospective student. And if they come with their parents, their parents too, of at least half the learning you do here at UJ, and maybe that's true for all liberal arts colleges, is outside the classroom. We're with your academics, the goal is that we guide you, you set up, but you're doing a good chunk of that learning. Now, myself, I was not a student athlete. I did all of the clubs, you know, and so entered the collegian for a year. So another plug.
Collegian,
well.
Let's go.
But, you know, half that learning being outside the classroom, really, we've got to set them up in the classroom, but all of those additional experiences are hopefully what's getting that holistic student, well-rounded student, and that experience to build on that.
Absolutely. And to be honest, man, I'm 37 now. You know, I have the same group of 10 buddies that I graduated with here. And we don't talk about the games. You know, we don't talk about, you know, who made what play versus Valley in 2007. Like, we talk about the shenanigans that we did in Cruzy and Watson. You know, I mean, just the holistic experience that most liberal arts places give. Like, I don't know, I don't want to say it out loud, like, kind of a cult. Like, we have a good culture, and the root word of culture is cult. And I think that the big thing for our kids is just being a part of something. I think that gets lost sometimes, is, you know, the student that maybe comes here and isn't a part of anything, and they don't join something right away, or they're, you know, that experience isn't what I think college should be. Like, my sister is a great example. And if she watches this, I apologize, Shannon. Like, she went to community college and lived at home. So she went to class, came home, went to work. And she transferred to ASU, went to class, came home. Like, she doesn't have any college friends. She didn't have any of those experiences outside of the classroom at her college that she went to. And it just, it pains me sometimes to see that, because it's like, I talk about my buddies all the time. And, you know, she doesn't have that group, which is, I think, like you said, you learn a lot out of the classroom.
Coach, you've talked a little bit about this, but I want to give you an opportunity to be even more specific. So, talking about the relationships, I have a friend that says all the time that life moves at the speed of relationships. And so we all know the importance of relationships. And outside of maybe a community college experience like you referenced, it's hard to replicate that outside of sports, although there are other activities like speech and debate, like journalism, the school newspaper, things of that nature, clubs and activities where you can replicate those particular relationships. So as a college coach and as someone who is involved heavily in recruiting, given all of the potential harms of college athletics. And so in particular, we know that football is a dangerous sport. Even with all of the improvements for safety, there's still the potential of CTE. There's still the potential of, you know, breaking your leg and walking with a limp for the rest of your life. So how do you balance the cost benefit analysis to continuing to participate in such a dangerous activity versus the benefits that you will receive from being a part of that activity?
No, it's a great question. It's the moms most of the time. And, you know, I think when we get parents in my office, they sit right there and it's like, all right, you know, another 4 years of college football, we made it through, or another 4 years of football in general, we made it through high school without really any injuries. Like, how are you going to take care of my kid if something happens? And so, like, that's where we start talking about the benefits. And I think, okay, like, this could happen. I think the assumption, if you play a sport like this, and really any sport, I mean, you're assuming the risk. And now you as a person, as an 18-year-old, 17-year-old kid, like, you don't know that yet. Your parents do. And so, like, hey, what are some of the benefits of being able to go through this? And I think the easiest answer that we had, it kind of goes into the relationship part of it. Like, you're going to leave this place with the best friends of your life. You know, outside of your brother, the best man in your wedding is going to be somebody that you sat next to in the locker room or sat next to in the dorm room or whatever. Like, your student experience while you go through college and the relationships that you build are not a 4-year commitment. Like, you are now making a 40-year commitment. And so when you're 65, 70 years old, like, and you still get together with your college buddies and your grandkids are running around, like, you can't put a price on that. And I don't think, I don't know, you know, how most people deal with it. It's from a, like, a cost benefit, like, okay, go to a community college and it's cheap and it's almost free some places. Like, you can get what you want to get educationally and get the piece of paper. And if your goal is just to get the piece of paper, then yeah, like, I don't win those kids a lot. I'll tell you this, if you want the relationship and you want to look at the pictures on the wall that I have of all my buddies and everybody that's in my wedding and the kids that are all together, and I don't know how much that costs. Like, that is so invaluable to me in my life that my day-to-day, I mean, let's be real, guys. Like, I'm still in the group chat with my buddies that, like, it's the same group of dudes, and we're still 14 years old in the group chat, right? And so what we try to explain to the parents is the relationships that you're going to get, the experience that you're going to have, to make sure that when you leave this place, not only are you successful as a business person or as a professor, as a teacher, as a cop, as a whatever you want to be, but you're going to be successful as a husband and as a father and as a dude that has a group of friends and live life to the fullest that you want to. Because I think that we get that out of our place. We get that out of the liberal arts college experience in general. I say this story all the time, and it's not a football guy. So I'm a big fan of welcome weekend and orientation. And most coaches don't like that, especially the fall coaches, because we're getting ready for our season. Like, welcome weekend happens the week before our first game. So, like, it's kind of, all right, we got to get rolling here. I got married. I met my wife in grad school. We got married over in Fargo, Moorhead, and we got married on the football field. So I married one of those. Like, she's cool with it. And the officiant for our wedding was a kid that I met at welcome weekend that didn't play a sport here. Like, he was just one of my homies that I met at welcome weekend. We hit it off. He was the dude that rode his longboard around. His name's Grant Maring. Like, long hair, looked like a hippie, even though he was from West Fargo. And to be honest with you, like, lifelong friend, and a guy that, you know, I didn't hang out with all the time while I was in college, but we were connected and we always had that connection. And when they came to marry my wife, he was the dude that we chose to say our vows to. Like, that's how this works.
No, the relationship building is a really good point. I mean, I'm still friends with some of the ones who lived in Watson with me and that, you know, staying up the first week, nearly stealing the Cruzy Rock. Yeah, the dorm head of the dorm was not happy with the pickup in the courtyard at 3 a.m. But again, statute of limitations has expired on undergrad shenanigans. Good. But the relationships built for that. Most of the friends I continue to interact with on a daily basis as well are from those days, which for me, unlike a lot, it was very opposite of high school experience, the very stock standard high school experience. I opted out. I was the big introvert. I have my group of 4 or 5 fellow nerdy friends, and that's good. My entire goal of going to college was to get out there and do things. So I joined everything I could when I came here. So student senate for 2 or 3 years, editor of the Collegian, webmaster of the Collegian before that, and all of those things. Through the way, I did actually manage to graduate somehow, but I learned a lot of the relationship, dealing with other people. And I think that's a really good way you're putting it, Brian, of what sports is doing is, through athletics, through the teams, are we building the skills that those students have a perhaps better chance of just learning how to deal with others?
I'll tell you what, man, I got a picture over spring break with, I have 3 guys from Tucson, Arizona, and I don't know if they've ever seen a horse before or a cow. And I got a picture from, you know, one of my players who has a ranch down in Harriet, Selby, South Dakota, and with the 3 Arizona kids that are, you know, milking cows. It's like, this is, you can't put, like, now they have an understanding and a respect for a different culture. And I have a personal experience with that too. I was one of the first Arizona kids, I think, that came up here, that was recruited up here. I think there was a group of guys that were before me, but I came up here. I'm pretty sure I was the first kid with a flat billed hat, like black socks and a pair of Vans. Like, I did not look the part with the cowboy boots and the Wranglers on. And so, you know, when I got up here, I was loud, obnoxious, cocky, like all of the things. And one of my best friends and the godfather to one of my kids is a farmer from Edgley, North Dakota. And I remember going down to his parents' place and his farm and being like, people live like this? Like, what is going on? And, you know, just those relationships matter, man, because we had our first child and he's the godfather to my kid now. And so I think, yeah, it's being able to learn with so many different groups of people and so many different ways of life. And some of the friendships that we see on our football team with guys from, you know, affluent families in a big city to, you know, single mom homes that work three jobs. And that kid didn't have the same upbringing as that kid, but they're best friends. And like, that's just, there's some really cool stuff that goes along with being on a sports team and what sports does for our college experience in general. And I think it's just so invaluable, man. Like, I deal with that a lot. You know, hey, my kid can go to a community college or get his apprenticeship and be an electrician and make $100,000 a year next year. Great. Do that. If that's what you want to do. Like, life's about choices. Like, go do whatever you want to do. But you can also come here, have the 4-year experience, play college football and still do that. And so I think that there's a fine line of finding out what the young man and the young woman want to do. Like, what's your life goal? What's your path that you want to take? And then really see how we fit into that. We've told kids, no, like, don't come here. Like, cause this isn't what you want. And now we've told a lot more yes, but I'll tell you what, like, you can't put a price on it. I mean, some of these kids are going to meet their wives and their husbands, and then it's a whole other ball game now. Like, you're going to have kids, and those kids are going to want to be Jimmies. Like, I'm dealing with it right now. I mean, my kids want to be Jimmies. Like, there is no other choice in their world.
And yeah, so, my best friend's son is graduating this year, and, well, he's coming to play for you next year. So
let's go. Connor's my guy.
Yeah, he's going to be a fun one. So, but, you know, and you've been doing things with the younger kids as well. I don't know if this was the first year or second year you had the Blue Jays, the JPS, the public schools, and UJ. You had a joint kind of football camp going on there. I do remember you had some key words there with your kickoff speech there, but it's something you're trying to also start instilling a little bit earlier before the college experience as well, it seems like.
Yeah, we just want to use our medium, right? Like, football is our avenue to help young people learn life, right? I mean, hey, get in line, like, listen to the coach. I mean, there's just things that as first, second, third graders, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth graders, even as you go a little bit higher, like, hey, you're probably going to listen to me right now a little bit better than you're going to listen to your parents, but you still need to listen to your parents. And I think there's just some learning that happens at a young age when you are able to facilitate a structured environment that allows them to be successful and allows them to have freedom within the confines of a standard and an expectation. And so I think the younger that we can start, you know, people being in things, like, in general, like, I'm a huge fan of be involved in something. And I don't care what it is, because whatever you're involved with, you're going to have other like-minded people that are with you. And then when you have more like-minded people together doing something for a good cause, you know, that's a win for everybody in society in general. And I think then those people start to branch out, and now you have multiple facets of cultures mixing together and being good people. Like, rule number one, be a good person. Like, it's not that hard. Like, that's the golden rule, man. And so I think starting at a young age, we have a flag football league that we do all summer where those kids get to learn and from our players, and you know, our players get servant leadership out of it. It's volunteer for them. They get to really handle little kids and the parents and being able to deal with some of those adversities, which hopefully when they become older and they have kids and they're sitting in the stands, you know, they're better people as well. And so it all boils down to a couple things for me, like, be a good person And if we can start instilling those values at a very early age, my four-year-old's out there running around playing flag football. And I think it's really fun to see like the standard and the structure that he lives in that world, and try to be able to get that home and say like, all right, dude, it's bedtime. Well, I don't want to go to bed. Well, you have to stay on sides. You can't jump off sides. And if you jump off sides, it's a penalty. It's no different. If you don't go to bed, there's a penalty. Like, oh, okay. I mean, there's just some cool things that go along with it.
Coach, we're going to take just a short break. And on the other side of this break, I'd love to hear your thoughts about how the college football game has changed in the past few years with the introduction of the transfer portal, with the introduction of NIL deals, name, image, and likeness. Does that impact us at UJ? And maybe some of your larger thoughts about all of those changes in general. You're listening to Jimmy Office Hours. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Jimmy Office Hours. I'm Scott Lloyd, along with Jacob Barnard. And we're having a great conversation with the coach of UJ football, Brian. And Brian, I want to know your thoughts about the particular changes that we've seen in college football over the past few years. If you think about the transfer portal, giving student athletes an opportunity, if they're not succeeding or having the level of success that meets their expectations at a particular university or college, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, they can enter the transfer portal, which gives them opportunities to be picked up by other colleges and universities across the country. And also the introduction of name, image, and likeness remuneration for college athletes. And I know in our speech and debate world, these are topics that have been debated for a long, long time. And I wonder if you'd be willing to share your thoughts, how these changes are impacting the game. Do they have any impact on our college athletes at UJ? And if so, how?
Well, I am, like most things, I think initially an amazing rule was put into place to allow students that aren't having the experience. And I don't even know if it's success or the level of success or whatever. I think if you're not having the experience that you want and you think that you can get that somewhere else, I'm all in, because the rule used to be if you transferred, you had to sit out a year. Well, you have to sit out a year. Now you're not having the experience you want anyway. And so allowing them to have the ability to say like, all right, this isn't what I signed up for. There was a coaching change and this wasn't the relationships that I had built with this staff, whatever. If those guys, girls want to transfer and try their luck somewhere else, I'm all in. I think there's no issue with that at all. But like most things, it can be abused. And when you start looking at it from a perspective of, okay, well, this coach recruited me. I committed to come play here and I didn't pan out to maybe the way that coach thought I would. I'm not playing and all I want to do is play. So I'm going to go somewhere else where maybe I can play. Okay. Experience. You still want to have that. And I get that. Okay. Once you do it once, twice, three, four times with some of these players, like now there's a common denominator. Like what's going on? Is it the coaches? Is it the university? Is it the school? Is it the experience? Or is it you just not getting what you want? And I think that that's the bigger issue that I see. I saw a number, and I don't know if it's right. There's some 12,000 kids in the transfer portal for football across all three levels. There's not 12,000 spots for kids to go to. And so I think now you're starting to find, all right, the grass isn't greener on the other side. You know, the grass is greener where you water it. And I think there's always going to be extenuating circumstances. Like coaching changes are a big one, I think. If a coach has the freedom to leave, then the kid should. I think that's an overarching argument that always comes up. Your coaches are getting paid all this money and the players are just getting used, which will come into the name, image, and likeness stuff here. Like, I want to go where I'm wanted and this coach wanted me and now there's a new coach here and he doesn't want me, so I want to try somewhere else. I'm in. Sign me up. Okay, I came here and the coach told me everything and was honest and upfront with me and I just don't like that I'm not playing. What are we teaching kids now? Like the adversity part of this life that you need to get through and battle through and come out on top. Like, no, I'm just going to skip out. It's terrible, man.
It's interesting to hear that angle of it though, because from the academic side of things, you know, don't really remember, you know, I was, our president calls them non-nons, non-athletic, non-music. That was me. And I remember, you know, oh, you'd have one or two transfers a semester, early 2000s, but it didn't really see, there was not that many. But we're having to sit out a whole year that drove a lot of that. But then you see nowadays having a student come in to your program with credits from something else is very rare to find them without credit from somewhere else because of the volume of transfers, which makes the academic side interesting. And you're like, well, why is this happening? But to your, it's interesting that you make the point, though. It is about the experience. And if we're providing a holistic experience in there, for whatever reason, not having a good experience somewhere else or not having a good one here, is it that bad that they're moving around?
Right. And you're 100% correct. Back in the day, there just wasn't that many. And if you did get transfers, they were usually from junior colleges.
Yeah.
Like there was, you know, they did their 2 years at a place for whatever reason they wanted to go there first. Like, whether it's money, whether it was, you know, opportunities, however that works, like most of the transfers that we saw were junior college guys. Well, now the 4-year transfers, a lot bigger uptick because frankly, you know, it's better for us as coaches now to say, okay, we're going to go get a transfer that still has 4 years of eligibility left. Like he didn't like his experience at a place. So now he still has 4 years because he didn't play. Is sometimes more beneficial for us as a program than a junior college guy that's only got 2 years left. So now you're getting a longer time with that athlete to buy into your values and your culture and all the things that go along with it. Now we still recruit junior colleges as well, and I think the biggest issue that I have with it, it's not the rule. I like the rule. It's the rule being abused, and maybe abused isn't the right word. Taken advantage of in a sense where. Now the kid doesn't understand that if you go to 4 different colleges, you're not matriculating anywhere and you're not going to probably graduate within 4 or 5 years. Like you still have to have 60 credits at a place to graduate. And if you transfer your junior year and then your senior year, like where are you going to get the degree from now? Or you're going to be in college for 7 years and you're not going to be a doctor.
And that's been the impression on the academic side of the problem or the risk with transfers is, you know, they come into our program, say in the computing department, and they're struggling in a semester. Well, I'm just going to transfer. Well, that's great, but that you're still going to have the same issue at the next place that you're having here.
No, and coach, yeah, just to follow up on what you're saying there about the name, image, and likeness. Let's say that there is a very talented football player for our level that you want to go after. How do you counter? Because I would imagine there's not a lot of opportunities for name, image, and likeness in Jamestown, just based upon where we're at geographically, right, and media access, etc. What's your argument to a talented recruit that says, I could go to a larger market and yeah, I may not get the big name opportunities, but I could certainly make a little cash on the side based upon, you know, advertising for small mom and pop shops or something like that around town. How do you counter that argument if that's what a kid is wanting?
You know, and to be honest with you, if a kid is wanting that at our level, there's some delusion there because across the country, you know, the NAI, even the D2 level, there's not just none of these kids, not a lot of these young people are on full ride scholarships anyway. So like there's not a lot of room for name, image, and likeness money coming from like our collective or our alums, like some of the big schools have, because they're not even on full tuitions anyway. Like we probably should get them there first before we start giving them cash. Mm-hmm. And now that's not we, that's the collectives and the people that do all that stuff. So at our level, I don't see much of it at all. You know, the things that I notice from the name, image, and likeness is I've gotten this question like, hey coach, I run a YouTube channel and I make money off of it. Or I run my TikTok account has a ton of followers and I monetize this. Like, is there any rules that your program has that maybe prohibits me from doing that? I get more of that than I get like, hey, you know, I'm looking at Jamestown and I'm looking at Ohio State and they're going to give me $500,000. Well, you should go there.
And so how do you answer that question if a kid does have a very popular social media following?
Hey, promote the Jimmies, man. Let's go. I'm all in. If you're making money off of your YouTube channel and it's something that falls in line with our values at all, if it's just funny or whatever, like, go ahead, put a Jimmy Football shirt on while you're doing it. And I think that it's really easy for us to be able to say that because you're probably not talking about a ton of money anyway.
Right.
And if they're going to do it, they're going to do it anyway. So like, why prohibit them from wanting to do it? You know, whether it's, you know, Twitch, we get a lot, you know, guys that, you know, stream their stuff, you know, Instagram and TikTok are kind of big ones where, you know, I promote this. Like, we have a couple of kids on our team that, you know, Bubbler sends them cases of water and they just have to tweet about it or Instagram post about it every once in a while. I mean, there's some cool things that happen there, but it's usually those things from a name, image, and likeness. Like, I know our baseball program, one of our baseball players has an Aaron Rodgers, like, faux account. Like, he pretends he's Aaron Rodgers and millions of views.
Yeah.
And is I think is probably getting paid from it. But like, that's not because we're giving, like, our alumni are giving him money or our collective are giving him money. And so I think that that's the bigger part that we see is back in the day, you couldn't do that. And like the before name, image, and likeness, if you had a YouTube channel and you were making money off of it, you were an amateur. You cannot do that. But now that they've allowed that, that I think opens up a lot more freedom for our kids to use, hey, I'm a football player at the University of Jamestown, and this is my YouTube channel where I promote, you know, me playing video games or whatever. That's make money, dude. Be an entrepreneur. We want those here, last I checked. And so I'm all in on that. But as far as like what you read about in the papers and on ESPN, where, you know, Johnny's transferring from Alabama to Georgia because the collective gave him $2 million, that is a whole nother. I know nothing about it. I've never seen that amount of money in my life. B, I think that's where this gets out of hand. Is it used to be, I think the origin of the rule, I'm in, allow the kid to make some money. Now a kid's going to a car dealership and doing a commercial, but he leaves with a Lexus. Like, that's okay. That is that really name, image, and likeness? Or is that just, hey, you're a really good football player and I want you to score touchdowns on Saturday for my team, so here's a new Lexus. Come over to my dealership and shake a couple hands. I don't like that. I don't think that that's what college athletics is for. Now, that opens up a whole other ball game, guys, on right. Are college athletes supposed to be paid? What are they? Are they student? Are they employees of the university? Like, that's a whole other world, because I'm still an old school believer of, you're a college athlete. If you were pro, then yeah, do all those things. But as a college athlete, the amateurism I still believe in still matters to me. Like, you're doing this. Yes, you're doing this for the school, and the school is using you to a certain extent to promote their brand and make their money. I get it. But like, if you don't want to do that, then don't do this. That's where my head goes. Like, if you don't want to do that, if you're a basketball player and you're really good and you don't want to go overseas and play for a year and then come back, like, you don't have to go to college. You get to go to college. I mean, that's my belief on it, is if you don't like the rules, then don't play by them.
Yeah. I definitely agree with the whole loosening a little bit, so that if somebody is a YouTuber, which is a valid career aspiration these days, yes. Just ask my son.
Hey man, but, I just got done watching Nico and Cash this morning.
So that those opportunities that particularly the modern tech in this world that facilitate things like that aren't blocked by the rules and restrictions, because we want our students experiencing a little bit of everything. And if side jobs are that, which are totally legitimate, and ways to do it aren't burning CD discs in the dorms sort of fundraising opportunities.
Bootleg and
that is fantastic.
Absolutely, man. Because like, back in the day, for those of you that remember like the Pony Express and watching the, you know, the 30 for 30 on ESPN, where, you know, the guys at SMU were just finding duffel bags of money in their locker. Like, yeah, that's not good, but that's kind of what it almost is now. It's just got a rule behind it that says you can. And so at what point, and now let's be real, it's kind of just football and basketball from what I've gathered right now. You know, there's some like women's basketball, obviously, I'm assuming Caitlin Clark was getting some type of NIL money. You know, there's things like that, but I don't know enough and at that level, which is why I love the level that I'm at. Because I don't want to deal with it. like life's about choices. We talked about this already. Like my choice in this life, in this profession, is to not be at that level because I don't want to deal with that. And I'm pretty confined to being here and liking the kids that we have that want to do this because they love it and they want to have a better experience in college and all that stuff. If I had a kid that came in, guys, and said, you know, coach, what type of money are you going to give me? Yeah, you're probably not a Jimmy, dude.
Coach, you've alluded to this, but I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit more about it. The idea of looking for a student athlete to play football at the University of Jamestown, what would that student athlete look like? Do you evaluate first for talent? Do you evaluate for academics? Do you evaluate how they will, the chemistry that they might have with you and your coaching staff, the other players, or your particular offensive scheme or defensive scheme, or is it all the above? What is the prototypical student athlete who plays football at the University of Jamestown? Who do you have in mind?
Great question, because it varies. You're 100% correct. I mean, there's some initial watch film talent. Let's make sure that we're bringing in somebody that's going to help us potentially win football games. But then from there is when the deeper it gets. So if we get film, or if we're watching film, or if something pops up on, you know, X or whatever, we instantly reach out to that high school coach. And so the high school coach is going to know this young person a lot better than most people. All right, we ask a couple of questions. Is he a good person? Okay, what kind of teammate was he? How are his grades? Would you let us recruit him? Like, those are pretty four standard questions that most college coaches, I think, would ask. And you'll be amazed at those answers, because we'll see a really, really talented football player and say, hey, coach, what do you think? Coach, you know, I hope he has a great career somewhere, but he's not a great teammate. Well, I don't want him. You know, or you get the, yeah, coach, you know, he's student body president. He was the prom king and the homecoming king. You know, he's led our team in volunteer hours. Yeah, this is a great kid. You're going to want him. Like, so now that kid goes up, he goes up. And it's really simple for us to want to recruit a young man that has the off the field accolades from his coach just as much as the on the field accolades from the paper. And I think that when you start digging into the recruiting aspect of it, you have to look at the whole person, which is why we look at the whole person and we try to teach the whole person here, right? And the better human being, the higher he goes up in my book. And then the better football player, then that's where the scholarship gets higher too. And so I think that we have a really good blend here of amazing young men that want to do this, that have the recommendations from their high school coaches. But there's a blend of guys that maybe they didn't have a great relationship with their high school coach, but we're going to give a shot to because I have a good relationship with them and I can't see any flaws or faults or things that maybe we did here. So you kind of have to take what the high school coach says a little bit with a grain of salt sometimes if it's negative, because the kid's 16, 17 years old. Like, at what point are we just turning away, you know, a kid had a bad experience or made a bad decision as a 15-year-old?
Right.
Like, well, we're not in that business. So the prototype, I want a great human being first. First and foremost, a great human being that wants and loves the idea of being able to chop wood and carry water and battle through the process every single day. And so when we explain that to young men, when they come in to visit us and I give them the, hey, you're going to play an hour of football in your career speech, you know, the guys that light up and they're like, yeah, this is awesome. Yeah, that makes sense. The guys that get taken back and they go, whoa, I mean, I'm not going to potentially play for a couple of years. Well, yeah, like those are the red flags that go, all right, is this kid going to really make this or not? And then academically, obviously, it's super important that they're diligent in the classroom, because if we bring them here and they play for a year and then fail out, that's not a good thing for anybody. So we have to kind of monitor the diligence that they have. Are they a 2.0 with a 34 ACT? Okay, that kid's lazy and he can do it. So we have to help facilitate him the ability to do it. You know, is he a 4.0 with a 16? Okay, that kid has to work really, really hard to get his grades because the pages don't turn as fast as maybe as the other kid. But he's still a good player for us to want to recruit. And then you get the middle of in between, which is what I was, you know, the 3.0 18. Okay, like that kid's going to have to work really hard to get to maintain that, or he's going to succeed and get through this just fine. So no, I think prototype, good people, man. If you're not a good dude, I don't want you.
The off the field emphasis is pretty interesting, because it's kind of what we were saying for the classroom too, where a lot of what you learn is, I know, for example, the young man, my best friend's son, who's joining you in the fall, that was one of the key things that sold him on UJ, was sitting down with Brian and your team, and the discussion on leadership, and that being one of the key things that you were looking for, and one of the things that you were interested in him for, was an emphasis on leadership, not playtime, not anything else, that seeing the big picture, emphasis on leadership skills, that's what sold UJ, beat out the stigma of being a townie, because
right.
While neither of his father nor I are, we never really left town, so ergo he became one. So that stigma, he looked elsewhere. He looked at other towns, which, you know, hard to blame him for, but that sparkle of leadership and off the field, outside the classroom emphasis seemed to really be what cemented his opinion to come here.
We want to develop leaders, right? And I think, you know, we had the Marines come and talk to us a couple of years back, and something really stuck with me was that everybody has the ability to be a leader in some capacity. And it doesn't matter if you were the, you know, the extrovert screaming out loud captain of the football team, or if you were the introvert, that O-lineman that sat in the corner. Like, no matter what, within your realm of being, you can be a leader amongst the people that you're around, amongst the decisions that you're making from a day-to-day. Doesn't matter. And I think that we do, at this place, man, we do an amazing job of saying, hey, you have a role. Be a star in your role and be the best version of yourself that you possibly can be. Others will follow. Can't be a leader without followers, right? And so, like, others will follow you if you do things right and correct and you consistently do it. I think the biggest problem that young people have, and I struggle with it too, I mean, I think everybody at some point does, is being consistent. Because I think, you know, once you start being consistent in daily things, that's when things really start to go through the roof. And just consistent daily effort is just something that, once you find that in a young person, man, those kids go through the roof. And so, no, but what are leaders? Most of those people have consistent abilities to do the right thing all of the time.
And Scott, that kind of builds off of what you talked about earlier with the relationship building. So teaching students to build those relationships, and we really harped on this, I think, in one of our previous episodes, but the leadership, it's interesting that you're putting it in the terms of leadership as well, but it kind of sounds like it goes back to that core relationship building.
Yeah, this idea, and we've talked about this before, John Maxwell, who is a huge leadership guy, writes a lot about it, talks a lot about it, identifies the three C's that potential employers look for in their potential employees. And this goes to leadership as well. Competence, chemistry, and character. Do they have the competence to do the job? From your perspective, coach, do they have the competence? Do they have the talent to play the particular position that you're recruiting them for? Do they have the character? Are they good people? You've emphasized that over and over again. And then that final C of chemistry. Do they play well with others? Do they work well within the context of a team? And sort of to bring this full circle, coach, we're nearing the end of our time together, but I'll give you the opportunity here once again to make the pitch for UJ football, for UJ athletics. I think one of the benefits of what we do here specifically is that we give student athletes an opportunity at a liberal arts education where they get the stage to develop their competence, to develop their character, to develop their chemistry in a way that they may not have otherwise. And so that's a great opportunity. And one of the big selling points of coming to UJ to continue their athletic career, but most of all, it's about developing those relational skills, those leadership skills, and those life skills that are going to serve them for a lifetime.
Your best ability is your availability, and I've heard that from a lot of people now. If you are open minded and you are available to continue learning, I think that you're going to gain and grow and live your life the way you want to as you go through college. And I just, the young people that are closed-minded and this is the way that I need to do it and this is the way that things are done, like that, you know, change equals growth, guys. Like, you have to be able to adapt and learn and grow if you want to be successful in life. And then when you start to see the availability of these people to have open minds, I think it's their best ability. If you have the ability to be available to learn and grow and do the things that you should consistently try to do all the time, you're, you know, through the roof. And I think that that's something that the college platform that we have here at Jamestown, allowing our kids to be holistically taught, okay, and not just, hey, I'm an engineer, or hey, I'm this. Like, you're so much more than that. And I read a book, and it's the one I go off of. Chop Wood and Carry Water by Joshua Medcalf talks about this. Like, who are you? Like, one of the chapters, literally, that's the question. Who are you? And most people will respond with, I'm Brian Mistro. I'm the football coach of the Jimmies. Okay? No, you're not. I'm Brian Mistro, and I'm a human being, man. And I'm a grower. I'm a learner. I want to be somebody that's better than I was yesterday. And I think that when you start to be able to answer that question that way, when you stop labeling yourself as I'm just this, that's where this place does a really good job of giving you the ability and the stage to grow and become a huge, better version of yourself. I've been to a couple places, I've been to a lot, but I just think we do such a great job of giving young people the stage to develop and grow and consistently learn. And the ones that are available to that having that ability is far better than the 40-yard dash.
That's a great way of putting it. It reminds me of a paper I read a little while back. I actually used it in my dissertation, called The Holistic Approach to Academia, Traditional Classroom Instruction, Experiential Learning of Student Athletes by Coffey and Davis. I'll link it in the show notes. But it really emphasized and showed research to prove it, that student athletes can have a competitive advantage in the job workplace because of that, the various learning styles that you talked, the experiential learning, which we also try to do that in the classroom as well, but dealing with things like failure, which we spent a lot of time on in a previous episode, and relationship building and all of those aspects in a structured approach, the student athletes are getting another dose of that. So yeah, it's Scott, you've got anything to finish us out with? Or?
Well, I think we should just leave the last word to Coach here. Give us Coach, your best recruiting speech for coming to play football at UJ.
Hey man, you get to do this. You don't have to do this. And I think life's about choices, and being able to make a choice to come play football for us is going to give you a platform and a stage to grow and develop as a human being and as a person. And I think once you start to value those things, then you start to understand what life's about a little bit more. And I think that we do such a great job as a staff. You know, it's not me, guys. The people that are surrounded by us is it's a fun place to come to work every day because of the young people that we have in it. And you want to surround yourself with amazing people. And I think we do a great job of that here. And there's no other place that I'd want to be.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys. This has been a Jimmy Office Hour. If you enjoyed this episode of the Jimmy Office Hour podcast, please do us a favor and be sure to like, share, subscribe, and rate our program. Let us know what you think and what you might like to hear about in the future, along with sharing the show to a colleague, prospective student, or somebody who might be interested in a liberal arts education. And thank you all for listening. Until next time, this has been the Jimmy Office Hour Podcast.